Paul Kinzer makes a difference, too, whenever he stops by. He is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. He's also has a portable planetarium, and he does shows all over the state. So talking with him now about the winter sky, about we can talk about space missions, astronomy gifts for the holidays. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Paul Kinzer, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Great to have you here. You know, the winter solstice is coming soon, December 21st. What does that mean, astronomically speaking?
It means it's the longest night of the year, so you can see, well, you can stay up all night if you want and see so much of the nighttime sky pass before you as the Earth spins on its axis. And the winter's a really great time for some bright constellations, the brightest one in the sky, in fact. Orion will be riding high in the southern sky during the winter this year.
Yeah, it's really, it seems brighter.
It does. And I think there's less moisture in the air during this time of year. And often when there's a lot of moisture in the air, the stars just are not as bright.
Yeah. And I know there's a meteor shower, a big one or a great one.
Yeah, the Geminid meteor shower. People don't talk about that one too much. They often talk about the Perseid meteor shower because that one, well, it happens in the summer. But at that time, the nights are very short and it could be very humid. The Geminid meteor shower, you could see up to 120 meteors an hour if you're under very, very dark skies and you are there right at the peak. But it's one of the most, productive of the year. And it happens because we're passing through the debris left behind by this really weird object. Some people say it's a comet. Some say it's not. Maybe it used to be a comet. It doesn't give off much anymore, but it left a lot of debris. It's called Phaethon, and it was only discovered in 1982. And this year, the Geminid meteor shower will peak on the night of the 13th and the morning of the 14th. And it'll be a good time because the quarter moon will set around midnight if you're up that late. And once the moon is gone, you can see a lot more meteors because a lot of them are dim.
So that's a good time to, get out in the country? Is that what you do,
yes,
Paul?
Yes, yes. The further from any lights, the better for anything to do with astronomy. You can see so much more if you can get away from lights for two reasons. One, the lights wash out the light of what's up in the sky. And two, the lights keep your eyes from really getting adjusted to the dark.
I've talked about this in the past, but our cabin in Bayfield County, you know, there's no light.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no light. And you get out at 10, 11 o'clock at night and just look up in the sky, and it is amazing.
Yeah, I've spent nights on Madeline Island, and it's some of the darkest skies I've seen in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Paul Kinzer, our guest. Question or comment for him, I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Comets, there is a comet that's coming close.
Yeah, it's actually here now. There are people who have more skills than I do at taking photos who've gotten a picture of this comet. It's got a very fun name, Comet 46P Wirtanen. Comets are named for the people who discover them, and 46P means it was the 46th comet with a period. That means it comes back, and we know it will come back. Many comets come through, and they zip out again, and we know we'll never see them again. This one comes, it actually comes fairly often, but this time it's going to pass very close to the Earth, just 7.2 million miles away, which might seem very, very far, but as comets go, it's very close. The closer they get, though, the quicker they pass by us. So it'll move across the sky from night to night. And on December 16th, it'll be about as close to us as it's going to get, and it'll be in a really beautiful place. It'll be right between the Pleiades, some people call them the Seven Sisters. It's a really beautiful star cluster. And the face of Taurus the Bull in the sky. So right near Orion. And if you can get out no, after, say, 10 or 11 at night, it'll be pretty high up in the sky. Comets often are very close to the sun in our sky when they're bright enough to see, because the closer they get to the sun, the brighter they get. So they're often in the sky right at sunset or around sunrise. This one is high in the night sky. Now, it isn't hale-bop bright like the comet that came by in the 90s, but with a pair of binoculars, if you know where to look, you should see it.
I tell you, I was thinking about hale-bop,
mm-hmm.
and that was an amazing, amazing sight with just a naked eye.
Yeah, whenever I think about it, I think of my nieces who are now, they're around 30, but at the time they were young children, and right in the middle of Minneapolis, you could see it just plain as anything. It was so, so bright.
I loved it, and it's a. What do you think about when you look at something like that?
Well, one of the things I think about is how huge they are. The ball of ice in the center might only be a few miles across, but the ball of sublimated gases around it can be up to a million miles across. It can be larger than the sun. And it's traveling at amazing speeds as it gets closer to the sun and whips around it. And then I also think about, where did it come from and where is it heading back out to? Very, very, very far. They come close and then they're gone.
And it makes me think about how really kind of small we are.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
We think we're kind of big here on Earth, but we're really kind of a pretty small dot in the scheme of things, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. And again, this one coming as close as it's coming is especially amazing to me.
Now, can you see it with, do you need a binoculars, telescope?
Yeah, I would think it's looking like it's probably not going to get bright enough. But you never know. That's the thing about this, too. In the next few days, it could possibly brighten, just because comets are a big ball of ice, and as they get near the sun, they melt. And if a bit of it melts and it sprays out a large amount of the gas that it's made of, it could get brighter. But I would suggest binoculars.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what else should we be looking for in the night sky?
Well, I talked about that star cluster, the Pleiades. Again, some people call it the Seven Sisters. It comes from Greek myth. And it's really a lovely thing to see, even with your naked eye. And it's pretty high in the southern sky now. It's still in the southeast a bit as the sun goes down, but it gets higher as the night goes on. It'll be out all winter long, too. And again, if you have any binoculars and you look at it, instead of seeing a little blob of stars, you'll see dozens of stars. It's a very pretty thing. And it leads a sort of parade across the sky, not too far behind it, rising and then crossing the sky from east to west, is what's called the Hyades, which is also the face of Taurus the Bull. It's a V-shaped group of stars. It's also really nice. And then following it is Orion. And then following Orion is the bigger dog, Canis Major. And the brightest star in that constellation, Sirius, is the brightest star in the sky. So there's lots going on all the time as the winter sky passes, and you have so much time to see it. Yeah, it's cold, but get out there.
Get out there, Paul, says Paul Kinzer. He is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. Always great to have him come by. And again, you can join in with your questions and comments as we move along. Talking about the stars today with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He has a portable planetarium and does shows all over the state. He's really a great guy, and it's always fun to have him with us. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got a question about the night sky, maybe about what's going on in our Mars program. Anything like that, give a call, 1-800-642-1234. And let's take a call. Steele in Appleton, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for the nice show. I'm looking at the homepage of the International Dark Sky Association, and maybe you can just tell some of the public about that. And, you know, it even affects, turtles getting born and, how light can be shaded to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the International Dark Skies Association, they're working hard to try and get people to understand the damage that all the light pollution does. Light pollution is basically just extra light that we don't need. I don't know why. When I was a kid, I grew up in St. Paul, and there were a lot of people there, but we could see a lot of stars. And now in St. Paul, you can't see that many at all. We seem to have decided we need to really light up the night like it's daytime. And there are people who think, oh, it'll help with crime, but the research doesn't bear that out. The crime is maybe even worse when people can see how to get into your house. But there are health aspects to it. It's true that wildlife, a lot of them, they don't know when it's night. They don't know what to do. And they're finding the more they look at it, it affects human health as well. Everything from our hearts to our lungs to cancers could be harmed by too much light. And it certainly harms astronomy. In my little town, Galesville, it's only 1,500 people. We have a light that shines right into my backyard that is utterly a waste. Interestingly, though, I don't know who's in charge of it. I live on a U.S. highway. And in the last 5 years, they've changed out our streetlights about 3 or 4 times. I think they're trying. They do have what are called full cutoff lights in most of our town now. Unfortunately, not mine yet. But the light shines only down. There isn't any point in having light shine straight out or up. It's just a waste of electricity. They're replacing a lot of them with LEDs, which is a great idea because you can choose the color you want. Unfortunately, they chose a very pure white, which has a lot of blue light in it. And that fools our eyes. The cones for color vision, they like the blue, but our rods for dim vision don't at all, and they get fried by that light. So a lot of research going on, a lot of possibilities with new technologies. I think we'll get there. This is one of those pollution problems that's easily solvable, and it would actually be cheaper to use new lighting systems that do less damage.
And Dark Skies website, do you know that offhand?
Yeah, I don't know the website, but any search for International Dark Skies Association is going to get you right there. And they are always hoping for people to help them, just like helping WPR here. They're a nonprofit, and they're having an effect. There are more and more places around the world that are calling themselves Dark Skies Heritage Sites, including a lot of our national parks. A lot of work is being done. More and more towns and even states are passing ordinances to try and do something about light pollution.
So, Steele, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. We'll turn to Ed in Middleton next. Ed, hello.
Hello. Yeah, my question is, we talked about this with friends of mine, and somebody said that the North Star, which used for navigations for thousands of years, is moved. It's no longer there anymore. It's gone from that spot.
Actually, that's not true. It's closer than it's ever been, or at least in the last 26,000 years. If you think of the Earth like a top, a spinning top, and you notice when a top spins, as it spins around dozens and dozens of times, the top of the top also sort of slowly wobbles. Well, the Earth does the exact same thing. It's called precession. And there's this circle in the sky that the North Pole of the Earth sort of wanders about. And right now, the North Pole is quite close to it. In fact, it will get as close as it's going to get in about the year 2100, and then it'll start drifting away from it. But it takes thousands of years. And I've often wondered, 2,000 years ago, the North Pole wouldn't have been particularly close, or the North Star, I'm sorry, wouldn't have been particularly close to the North Pole. So I'm wondering if it's only been used as a real guide star for the past few hundred years, maybe 1,000. But 2,000, 3,000 years ago, it wouldn't have been as close, anything like as close to the actual North Pole as it is now. And if you go to the Southern Hemisphere, they don't have a South Star. So you have to find different ways of getting around. And now we, of course, have GPS.
There you go. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it. Well, let's take another. By the way, you can join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Michael in Fitchburg, thank you.
Hey, thank you for having this show, Larry, and thank you to guests. I have a question because I was perusing telescopes earlier this year since I have an 11-year-old daughter and have her doing little passport science kits, and we have a very strong science background, but most of mine has been looking inward at small things, and I really want to... I think she's interested in astronomy. She would go out and, you know, watch shooting stars with us. But how does one engage an 11-year-old? Are there, like, astronomy clubs? I obviously don't want to drop a lot of money unless it's something that becomes a passion for her. But I'm assuming binoculars, and, you know, this is something I do with her. But I'm trying to figure out a good way to engage her and pique her interest, or at least see.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are so many ways you can do it. Binoculars are, I would say, a very, very good way to get people started. With a pair of decent binoculars, you can see quite a bit of detail on the moon. You can see four moons of the planet Jupiter. Looking at that star cluster I talked about, the Pleiades, you can see dozens of stars in it. So there's so much to see with binoculars. But if you don't know where to look, another idea is to get a book or possibly a subscription to a magazine, possibly. But there are also apps for smartphones, but I still don't own a smartphone, so I don't know a lot about those. There is a book, though, called The Stars, A New Way to See Them. It was written by H.A. Rey. He wrote the Curious George books, and it's been in print for 70 years now, and they keep updating it, telling you where the planets are. It really explains how the night sky works, and then it goes through all the brighter constellations, showing where they are in the sky, how to find them, what they're near, the lore behind them. If you had that and possibly a pair of binoculars, that would be great. Another thing to get possibly is a green laser pointer. You got to be careful with them. If you shine them at an airplane, that's bad. But if you don't, you can use them. They have a beam that you can actually see and learn the constellation outlines together, learn to point at things, to figure it out together. It's very difficult sometimes to show people, even if you know where something is in the sky, to show it to them by just pointing your finger, because they don't know what you're pointing at. But a green laser pointer gives you a beam you can see. And you can get one of those for, about $20. But be careful, because you can order them online. Weirdly enough, they're illegal. The legal limit for using a laser outside is 5 milliwatts, and yet on eBay you can get one that's 100 times that. So be careful with that.
And one other thing, Michael, I would say, since you are in Fitchburg, you're very close to the UW Space Place. And the UW Space Place, Jim Lattice, we have Jim on the show from time to time, and they have a number of free programs, and since you're in Fitchburg, you're they're on South Park Street, so you're in Madison, so you're a couple of miles probably away, and you can go to those evening free evening events. Just look up UW Space Place, UW Madison Space Place, and you'll find out about the various things, and they'll take you up, people up on the roof, and they pull out their telescopes, and it's very kid friendly. Having taken my own daughter there from when she was a little girl, younger than 11 even, she really enjoyed it. So UW Space Place, another place to go. And let's take a call from Doug in Mount Horeb. Hi, Doug.
Hi, great program. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to talk about the International Dark Sky Association, IDA.org. I know you guys were talking about it a little while ago on the program, but I thought people might be interested in knowing that you can go to the website and download model dark sky ordinances. They have ordinances for municipalities, cities, villages, and towns. And here in Dane County, in the town of Perry, where I live, we downloaded the model ordinance for dark sky for a town. And we took it to our town board and had a public hearing about adopting a dark sky ordinance. And the first year we did that, a lot of folks were interested, but quite a bit more folks came to the meeting and thought that it was just a completely crazy idea. So we talked about it again at a few other town board meetings, and long story short, we decided to do a survey in the town and asked people whether they would like to have a view of the night sky preserved in the town. And the majority of the town residents said they did. So the town board decided to pass that dark sky model ordinance. And now if someone wants to put up a new dusk to dawn light here in Perry, it has to comply with the shielding requirements for dark sky, which keep light from splashing up into the sky. And the old dusk to dawn lights that used to obliterate the view of the stars, when they're replaced, they have to be replaced with the new style downlighting.
Well, we are glad to hear that, and that's something else, Paul, that is on that site.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yes, they do have all sorts of information about best lighting practices. I know one of those lights that fills the night sky, one of the brand names for one of those was the Yard Buster. I mean, they wanted to light up the night sky. There's this idea that that's a good thing, but it isn't.
There we go. And Doug, thanks a lot for that, for telling us about that additional information you're going to find on that website. Appreciate it very much. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Kinzer. And right now we're connecting with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Great to have Paul back. And we'll take your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Wren in Presque Isle next, then we'll get to Dawn. But first, let's get to Wren. Hi, Wren.
Yes,
thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
I'm a retired science teacher. I just wanted to share the power of portable planetariums. I know that Paul hasn't had a chance to talk about his planetarium presentations, but we had an opportunity through our consortium to rent or borrow the StarLab planetarium, which is a portable planetarium. And I helped facilitate the elementary teachers into the use of it. The elementary teachers didn't have a lot of confidence in astronomy. And what was really cool about StarLab was it was portable, and I could take a few minutes and show the elementary teachers just exactly how to set it up and what were some really simple lessons. Lessons like the opportunity to show that objects, celestial objects, tend to rise in the east and set in the west, and that the reason for that. Things as interesting as the zodiac constellations imply, if you're a zodiac that is a Taurus, maybe you think you're going to look for your zodiac in June, and it really doesn't appear in June because it's in the sun. Little very simple things of that sort, and just pushing an opportunity to remind parents that their elementary teachers could be showing astronomy if they got into a consortium that has a portable planetarium, and that's just what I wanted to add.
Well, thank you, Wren, for calling. And, Paul, that's very true. And you get around, you talk to a lot of youngsters around the state.
Yeah. The portable planetarium I own is a StarLab portable planetarium, which was originally invented by a science teacher. And he did it as a project with some high school students. And then somebody said to him, you know, you could sell these. And I now have one. And I do travel all around Wisconsin and sometimes Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois. In fact, next summer, the theme, the Wisconsin Library theme, is space rocks. And I'm getting booked much earlier than I usually do. I figure I have now presented to well over 10,000 children in the years I've been doing this. And it is true. Once you set it up and you turn on the projector, it's easy to use. The issue is often people have so little knowledge themselves of astronomy that they're overwhelmed by it. And as you say, you don't need to be. You can show even the most basic things. Just getting the kids in there, turning off the lights and turning on the stars, turning on the motor so the night goes by instead of taking 10 hours to go by, it goes by in a couple of minutes. They're able to see things, and you're able to show them things very, very simply and easily. There's nothing, you know, people will say, what is it like to be in a planetarium? It's not really like anything, and that's what makes it so valuable.
Yeah, very, very cool. Wren, thanks a lot for calling. Paul, by the way, do you have a website? How do people get a hold of you for setting up appointments?
My website is kind of long, but it's seeingstarswi.wordpress.com. But if you just do a search for my name, Paul Kinzer, K-I-N-Z-E-R, Seeing Stars, that's what the company, I guess you'd call it, is Seeing Stars, Paul Kinzer, and it'll take you right to my website. And everything you want to know there. Earlier, too, we had the call about what should I do for an 11-year-old. I'm not trying to push you to buy my book. The libraries have them, although it'd be lovely if you bought my book. But that's what the book is all about. I don't know where to start. And the reason my publisher liked the book is because I talk not only about how to get started either with naked eye or binoculars or a telescope, but also some real basics on what's up there and what should I look at.
Yeah, very good points. And let's turn to Don in Saukville next. Hi, Don.
Hi. He just finished where I wanted to start. The gentleman that called in referenced 11-year-old. My kids and I didn't even get it started into the stars and stuff until we were on a bonfire campfire with a friend. And your screener asked me, the kids were each given what is, and I found it. I was glad. It's called the Glow in the Dark Sky Finder, the Zodiac Dial. And what's cool about it is you lay on the ground, it's a piece of cardboard with a cylinder on it, and it's probably $1.50 or $2. But you lay on the ground and you put the date and month and you hold it up to the sky, and the kids are able to do it themselves, find the constellations and stuff like that. And that's something all my kids have asked now for their children to get. And then we did the thing where you put the glow in the stars on their ceilings in their bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that takes up any space, but, you know, it's stuff that the kids can relate to.
Yep.
And then we ended up having a birthday party involving looking for stars, and the whole theme was about the stars and the planets, and the kids all camped out. It was a fun time for that age group that he's talking about. And that's where my kids got, you know, excited about it. So I thought I'd just pass that on to him.
Oh, sure. That's great, yep. Don.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you talk... people often say that astronomy can be the least and the most expensive hobby. You were talking about a device. I think it would be related to what are called planispheres, a plane and a sphere. You take the sphere of the sky and put it on the flat plane. It's two pieces of cardboard or plastic that rotate around each other, and yeah, you match the date to the time. You can actually go online. There's a thing called Uncle Al's Sky Wheels. If you just do a search for that, Uncle Al's Sky Wheels, it's a PDF that you can print out for free on some cardstock, cut it out, and make your own for nothing. So those are nice. And then there are some that you can get from bookstores, gift shops, and things for a few dollars. Yeah, they really, and they're even nice when you're not out in the night sky. They help you to learn why does the night sky change from hour to hour and night to night.
And they don't require batteries.
No, they do not. And speaking of glow in the dark, at a science center, I once got a bandana that had the night sky glow in the dark on it. So that's something you could just take off your neck and, hey, look, there it is.
Hey, look, there it is. Don, thank you so much for that. I really appreciate your call. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're stargazing today with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. We have a number of callers online, and I think we'll just go right to the phones here. And Dave in La Crosse, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, first of all, amen to your discussion about dark sky. There's a lot of people that have never really seen a dark sky at night. Second, I think a lot of people have the wrong expectations about what they're going to see because, they've seen a lot of pictures of the Milky Way and so on. And they don't realize those are taken through very large lenses and sometimes time exposures. And people ought to, see the real thing. I can drive 15 miles out of La Crosse and see the basics of the Milky Way and fifth magnitude stars. And you don't really need to go 100 miles or 500 miles to see something. I mean, it's much better when you do, but I wouldn't make a trip that far.
Yeah. Paul, it is true. You're vision really improves when you get out of town.
Yeah. I live about a half hour outside of La Crosse
yeah.
in my little town of Galesville. And from my backyard, if I can get into that one little spot where no lights shine on my eyes, I can see the Milky Way. I can see the Andromeda Galaxy. There is a lot to see, but you're right. Your expectations can't be based on photographs that you see online or in magazines or books. Most people, when they look through my telescope at, say, Saturn, they're blown away and they're amazed. But every once in a while, there's someone who said, well, I've seen better in books. And it's like, yeah, but this is a real thing. This is the light from Saturn hitting your eyeball. It's a billion miles away. So I'm excited by that. But it's true. You can see something from anywhere, except maybe Chicago or New York. There, I've heard you can't even see one single star at night. You can see the moon there. You can see planets. Yeah. But, you know, you said you wouldn't travel that far. And I don't know that I would recommend people traveling that far just for astronomy. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I would. because if you do get really far away, you can see an amazing amount. I was in the Sandhills of Nebraska, where I could read by starlight, not moonlight, but starlight, because my eyes were able to really adjust. And after a while, the sky doesn't even look black anymore. It looks sort of, you can see, there's a thing called sky glow. If you look at pictures taken from the International Space Station, the sky has a glow. It can be sort of reddish or greenish, and I could see that. So if you are going to head out somewhere in the real darkness, don't forget to look up.
Yeah. Don't forget to look up. Dave, thank you so much for calling. Ron in La Crosse, we'll turn to you. Hi, Ron.
Yes. I just wondering, well, by the way, I renewed my membership to WPR.
Thank you.
That's Saturday. And I have, you know, they talk about the dark sky. I think the only one of the few places you could really get a dark sky right now is probably you'd have to go to North Korea because they don't have much of a power grid. But my other question is, has your guest heard of the Mercury Mirror Telescope? Because what they've done up in British Columbia, you once had an astronomer on from Canada or Britain, and he talked that in British Columbia they got a Mercury Mirror Telescope where you can adjust the focal length by adjusting the mirror or the speed of rotation of a pool of mercury, and it can change the focal length. And I guess NASA's pretty excited about this. So I was just wondering if you heard about that.
I have heard about that, and they do work. They're not easy to use, and they can only aim straight up because what they do is they take a big round pool of mercury and they spin it. And when you spin it, it sloshes out towards the edges and it makes the right shape for a telescope mirror. Of course, if you tilt it at all, you're going to spill your mercury. So it can only be aimed straight up, which is useful. But within limits, and mercury is, of course, a kind of a deadly substance, so you'd have to be very careful with it. It is fascinating, though.
Thank you so much, Ron, for calling. Appreciate it. I hadn't heard of that. Mercury mirrored telescopes. Yeah. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Steve in Madison now. Steve, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey, Paul, have you talked about, I just turned on the show after coming back from a walk with the dog, but have you had a chance to talk about 46P, the Weird Tannen comet that's coming in right now? Did you talk about that already?
We did talk about that. I actually haven't seen it yet because I haven't had a clear night that I was able to get outside. But just in the next few days, it will reach peak brightness. I'm not sure how bright that's going to be, but it is certainly something you'd be able to go out and see up there again on its peak night, the 16th, not too far from the Pleiades, between the Pleiades and the Hyades up there near Orion.
There we go. Thank you, Steve. Steven in Mineral Point is looking for a recommendation for entry-level astronomy binoculars. He hopes you can recommend brand and magnification.
Yeah, I would say for astronomy, what you'd want to do is you'd want to go and actually look at a pair. binoculars can be very small, very large, very heavy, very light. And I bought a pair that were recommended by so many people. And then I tried them and I couldn't use them because they didn't fit my eye sockets. They were very uncomfortable for me to hold to my eye. So that was $200 I didn't really have to spare. But I was able to sell them for almost what I paid for them. But yeah, you want to try them out first, because binoculars you might use for birding, you're going to hold them up for a second or two. But if you're going to be out looking at the stars, you're probably going to hold them up to your eye for minutes at a time. So they need to be comfortable. And the thing to look for, if you want them better and better for astronomy, is the larger the lenses on the front, the more you're going to be able to see. So if you have a pair of 7x35s, that means they magnify 7 times, and their objective lens, the lens you aim at the object, is 35 millimeters across. And those would work fine, but if you can hold 10x50s, you have a 50 millimeter objective lens, and they magnify 10 times. And that 50 millimeter lens is going to show you more than twice what that 35 millimeter lens is, because the area of the lens, not the diameter, the area is what gives you the more viewing, and 50 millimeters has an area more than twice the size of 35. So if you can hold them up comfortably, and I can, I'm a big guy, that's great. But if you're a smaller person, 7x35 would be a great size. And those are very common sizes. But again, as far as brands go, you should try them yourself. A decent pair of 10x50s, I held a pair up. They were very inexpensive, but they worked just fine, and they were less than $40. Mine cost about $100, and they're from Nikon.
All right. Let's go to Jeff in Oregon next. Jeff, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, fellas. I'm curious about a constellation that got its name from mythology, from Devil's Tower in Wyoming, and I believe it's called, referred to as Seven Sisters.
I don't know a lot about Native American star lore. The little bit of memory I have is they may call what we call the Big Dipper the Seven Sisters. But what we call typically the Seven Sisters is not a constellation. It's a small star cluster called the Pleiades. And people with very good vision, for me, it just looks like a little blob in the sky. But people with good eyes, weirdly enough, they can see 6 stars. People with really good eyes see about 14. So they don't see 7. And that, you know, that would be something I would have to recommend you look. I don't know a lot about Native lore.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Gloria in Madison wonders, she says there's a mission launched to the sun. When will that start sending back information? Do you know anything about that?
It actually already did. I did some more in checking into this just last night. It's the Parker Solar Probe, and it launched in August. And it is amazing. It's already broken records. It's going to go in tighter and tighter orbits around the sun, getting closer and closer. And last month, in November, it went around the sun, and it got within 15 million miles of it, and it got up to a speed of 213,000 miles per hour. Those are already both records, and it's going to get closer and closer. And then on Christmas Eve in 2024, it's supposed to make its first of 3 very close passes, 3.8 million miles, about one-tenth the distance of Mercury, and it's going to be going 430,000 miles per hour. That's 120 miles in 1 second. Very, very fast. And it's named for, it's the first probe ever named for someone still alive. Dr. Parker, he thought of this, an idea for a very similar mission in 1958, 60 years ago. He is one of the pioneers in solar science. He's the one who came up with the idea of solar wind. And at first, nobody believed him. And now we know he was exactly right. So lots of interesting stuff going on there. And it's going to get closer and closer. The problem with going to the sun is going too fast. They actually have to slow this thing down, or they wouldn't be able to stay in orbit. So they're slowing it down by passing Venus and using the gravity of Venus to slow it down 7 times in the next several years. So just
wow,
fascinating stuff.
And let's go to Steve in Madison next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Say, I'd like to give a plug to the local amateur astronomy groups that are available for people to join with families. I belong to the Madison Astronomical Society, and yeah, we have
a yearly fee, but it's a family fee. So people join the, I mean, if any, we also have telescopes that folks can use out at our observatory here in town. In the other, there's many amateur astronomy groups that are available. I think there's one in La Crosse. We have them here in the Griffless area. You know, if people just go to their computers and find out if they've got an amateur astronomy group in their area, they just might have one. If people are really interested in astronomy, those are really good places to start.
Yeah. Steve, thanks a lot. Comment from you?
Yes, I'm a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, a sort of hoity-toity name. Mm-hmm. But it's been around for, nearly 50 years. And we have recently gotten an observatory built. I donated some astronomy equipment to it, and so did others. So, yes, the public is always welcome, whether they're members or not. My son, 17, he is now going to be a paid member. But I think any astronomy club would welcome anyone, whether you pay a fee or not. And I bet everyone in this state lives within a half hour or so of an astronomy organization, and they have lots of information.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve. And I wanted before we get away from everything here, I wanted to mention the Mars landing. And that has turned out to be that was a very successful landing, and they're doing some pretty cool stuff.
They are doing cool stuff, and I like how they're using already developed technology. They landed another craft a lot like this one, but they changed out some things. It's like modular stuff now. This one's actually going to study the internal goings on Mars. We don't know much about the does it have a solid core, a molten core? What's going on under the surface? So this actually has a sort of jackhammer thing that's going to tap a probe, I believe, about 16 feet under the surface. And it's got a very, very sensitive seismometer on it to check the motion. It's actually picked up things on the seismometer just from the light rush or Martian wind blowing on the craft. So very, very important and cool work going on.
it really, really is.
Just one more thing. Just checking at Sky and Telescope magazine this month, there are currently more than 70 probes in space studying astronomy, studying other planets, the stars, over 70 of them active right now.
So lots going on in the field of astronomy, and it's always a great pleasure to have Paul Kinzer come by and talk with us. His book, by the way, if you want a good book, take a look at Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's, Harvard Press?
Oh, it's Cambridge University
Cambridge
Press.
Cambridge Press,
Always amazes me.
It's wonderful. Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy.